Well, we're going to stick with the performance theme. And in some ways, you've already been introduced to this next presenter, if not in other ways, through Resolution 2018-20, where we provided a commendation to the network for putting her on the air. Authentically blind on stage and screen. One blind actress transforming obstacles into stepping stones. Now, again, a woman that has extensive notes about her career. I want to say these things. We don't have enough blind people on stage and on screen. And we want blind people, we want especially blind characters to be played by blind people. But on the other hand, we want to get to the point, and we don't have enough blind people out there to play all the blind characters, but we also want to get to the point where blindness is understood so authentically as it is in this audience that we have sighted performers who can play blind people with a positive understanding of blindness like we have. The only way we're going to get there is by getting more blind people into the industry and figuring out how to organize, get more blind people trained and well qualified, and to break through the barriers. Well, right now we at least have one blind person that's kicking as hard as she can to get us in there. Here is Marilee Talkington.
I love that I get a theme song. Now, who decided to put me after J.P. Williams? Come on, that's the hardest act to follow. He's amazing! He's absolutely amazing. I love it. All right. My name is Marilee Talkington. I am a professional actor. And I am so excited to be here because the ferocity in this room is stellar. When I walked in on, when did I come? July 4th. Walked in the lobby. And the number of you young people, all you young people with canes, I was stunned by how many young people there were. And it inspired me so deeply because I don't remember having that kind of community when I was younger. And so I'm just so deeply honored to be here and privileged. So let's dive in. Okay. I think one of the things that I wanted to talk about was transformation. This thing that I hear a lot of people talking about is how to turn obstacles into stepping stones. So just to give a little history, I was born with rod cone dystrophy. I'm totally blind centrally. My mom has it. It's genetic. I have peripheral vision. It's been degenerating over time. I'm light blind, which, lovely, these lights are shining right in my eyes. And I'm photophobic, so I'm light blind, and light causes me pain. So for those of you who have rod cone or cone rod, who don't have central vision, you understand that to see people, you look away from them. So in fifth grade, I got what I like to call the talk from my mom, who I have the same thing she does. And she said, and I want to preface this by saying that I don't judge her for saying this. She was working with the strategies that she had at the time, with the experience she had at the time. And she laid this out in front of me, and she said, now you have a couple choices, or a choice and a couple options. To see people, you need to look away from their face. Okay. Or you can look at them and not see them. If you look away from their face to see what you need to see, the world that we live in will treat you differently. I was in fifth grade. Or you can teach yourself to look people in the face, not see what you need to see, and move through the world. And as a fifth grader, I wanted to move through the world with as much ease as possible. So I chose option number two, and I trained myself to look people in the eyes. And I still do. Which can be very confusing for many, many people. Because when they meet me, they assume I'm fully sighted, which is not the case. But what it has opened up for me is I play mostly sighted characters on stage. 95% of the characters that I play are sighted. So, let's just jump forward. First acting class. I took my first acting class, UC San Diego. I was studying psychology and, yes, great, awesome, San Diego. Psychology and mathematics at the time. My grade point average was so-so. I needed to raise it. And I was looking for classes that I could take to raise my grade point average. And my friends had taken acting class, and I was like, no way, no, not even close. And I couldn't get into any other class, and I was like, fine, I'll take acting. So I took acting, and something happened. I started telling stories about other people, stepping into who they were. And it was the most incredible experience of my life, those first days in acting class, because all of a sudden, this enormous imagination that I had a platform to play on. And I'd always been good at voices and characters, but I never really had an avenue to walk down and express those things. And all of a sudden, I'm getting to live other people's lives. And all of a sudden, my life then felt limitless. And I started working with all these different characters, you know, and just like playing and then just doing something else, right? And then we talk, and you know, in every single character, it's not just about voices, but then you take on these completely different experiences of life, right? And so I realized this is what I want to do. And I never thought in a million years that I couldn't do it because of my eyesight. Never. Never crossed my mind. So, graduate, UC San Diego, grade point average lifted because of that acting class. I stop off in LA, that's a whole other story, we won't go there right now, but I end up in San Francisco, and I go to my first theater audition. Yay, Bay Area, go to my first theater audition. And they had what's called cold sides there. It's cold read. And what a cold read is they have the script, there, and you're supposed to grab the script and read it and do the audition, you know, look it over, and 15 minutes you're supposed to go up. Well, of course I can't read the script. So I asked the director, is there a photocopy machine? Because this is back in the day, this is 20 years ago. There's no technology around, right? And I'm like, is there a photocopy machine? He has no idea. So I go out searching for a photocopy machine, and it takes me 2 hours. And I find a photocopy machine at a local business. I think it was a real estate place, and I said, can I use it? And they were very kind enough to let me use it, and I enlarged it as much as I could enlarge it. And I found my way back eventually to the theater after 2 hours, and the director was still there. And I went in, and the sides, the script, still weren't large enough, so they were pretty darn close to my face. And I started reading. And the director said, if you can't read this script, you don't belong on stage. And he excused me from the audition. This is 20 years ago. I had no mentors. I had no one to look to talk to about this. There were no blind actors that I had ever seen or knew of. And I know that a lot of you can relate to this feeling of isolation. And this was one of those pivotal moments where I went home and I was devastated. And the question I asked myself, do you believe him? Do you believe that you do not belong on stage because you cannot read this? And the answer that came back was a resounding no, I do not believe him. But what I did believe at that point was that I needed training, and everything is about training, 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 training. Because this business, the acting business, it's, you have to be well trained. You can dream to be an actor, but if you don't actually do the work, it's not gonna happen. So I went to school. And this is where I began to advocate for myself, because I had to advocate for myself, because I was the first blind, low vision, I was the first disabled person to walk into those acting classes. And my first acting class, movement acting class, was at a studio. It was an Alexander Technique class, which is a movement class. It's all about alignment. And the teacher said, I'm sorry, but I don't think this is going to be the right class for you. You really need to see what I'm doing. And I said, no, that's not right. I'm going to be in the class, and we're going to figure this out. And so I had to battle my way into these classes. And then I go into the class, and I end up being the top student. And so I'm like, what is going on here, people? I have the drive. I have the willingness to go in the room. So you need to match that. But this happened over and over and over again. But it developed my muscle to self-advocate. So I get to, I auditioned for grad school. Because at this point, I've taken probably 10 or 12 studio classes, night classes, Shakespeare, voice, whatever. But I want to take it to the next level. So I want to audition for grad school. So I do that, and I don't get in. Not because of my vision. I just don't get in. Grad school, the program that I auditioned for is one of the top in the country. It's extremely competitive. But I didn't give up. I trained more that next year, prepared myself even more, and I auditioned the next year and I got in. I got into ACT. And I was the first person with a disability to ever actually get into that school. I believe I'm still the only person with a disability to go to that school. And at this point, there's only two legally blind actresses in the country with an MFA in acting. I'm one of them. And the thing, and I'm sure all of you have heard this before, I remember being taught at a very young age that you have to work twice as hard just to get to the baseline of everybody else, all the sighted people. And I said, I don't want to be at the baseline. I want to be great at what I am doing. So I'm working three times as hard, four times as hard. And I never took for granted one moment where I was in grad school. Not one moment. And so I had this experience, and I want to share this experience. And it's less about my vision and physically, and more about the vision for myself. We were doing this show called Master and Margarita. And it was directed by this wonderful Eastern European director named, Adrien Girard. And the role that I was cast in was Abaddana, the Angel of Death. And he had all these, you know, he said, okay, I want your big red curly hair everywhere. And I said, no, actually, if I'm the Angel of Death, I think I should be gender neutral. People shouldn't know if I'm male or female. I should be everything at all times. And there was I had no language. I had no lines in the script. I wasn't actually written into the script. And he said, well, okay, fine. You can be gender neutral, whatever that means, because that was 15 years ago. We didn't even know what that meant. And I realized that he wasn't calling me to rehearsal. And so I thought to myself, okay, if I'm the Angel of Death, where would I be? And I said, I'd be everywhere. So I started putting myself in all the scenes. So I showed up to every rehearsal, and I put myself in every single scene. And the director was like, this is brilliant. I had a brilliant idea. She's in every scene. I love it. And he took, and we go to opening night. And the irony is that if you ask anybody now who saw the show, who's the character they remember? The Angel of Death. And the director comes up to me afterwards, and he's like, just to let you know, I am taking credit for this. I said, okay, that's fine. But this whole thing about, it really solidified for me that moment, that particular moment, when the world doesn't have a vision for you, you must create a vision for yourself. And that is something that I hold in my heart very deeply, because long story short, I moved to New York after grad school. And I don't get that fancy agent. I don't get all those auditions because acting is really, really competitive. It's so competitive. And so I go there thinking, oh, I've got this great degree. I'm gonna do it. And it didn't happen. So what I did is I took my career in my own hands and I started creating my own work, or I continued to create my own work because I was already creating my own work all through grad school, much to the chagrin of my professors. I created my solo show, Truce. I played 22 characters in that, half of which were blind. And I started creating other work too, experiential work. That's what I like to call it, experiential work, where I was writing and directing and acting and stuff, and using site-specific, not just straight theaters, because even me as an audience member in a theater, I lose a lot of it. I can't see a lot of it. So I was creating theater that you could experience, that people could walk through, and really getting my confidence that way, not waiting for somebody to choose me. I was choosing myself. So I'm creating work, but I'll tell you, moving to New York, it was tough. And I actually ended up having a nervous breakdown. And I moved back to San Francisco to heal. And I thought, oh my God, I failed. I went to New York and I failed. I couldn't do it. I couldn't hack it. I'm not strong enough. And I went back to San Francisco, and there was this little whisper of a voice that said, no, no, this is exactly as it should be. You're on the right path. Have faith. Have faith. Have faith. Take time to heal. And so I went back to San Francisco, and I stayed with my grandmother, who gave me unconditional love, and I kept writing. And I wrote a play, and I directed that. And then I started slowly building a community in the Bay Area. And I was healed. I found this new strength after going through something really, really traumatic, failing. Moving back, going through something really traumatic, taking the time to take care of myself, and then picking myself up and taking that next step forward, because I knew that I was supposed to be an artist, that I am supposed to be an artist. Because I know that I'm preaching to the choir here. This game ain't easy. It's not easy, right? There's pain involved. There's failure involved. But the mark of who we are is what happens after we fail. And that's pick ourselves back up and keep going. So I'm in the Bay Area, and this is where the next level of advocacy started happening, because I had to teach the Bay Area community how to work with me and how to open their doors to more persons with disabilities. So I made the agreement with myself that, Marilee, you're going to go out and you're going to stay open and curious and engage in any and all conversations that come towards you. Because half your job is artist and half your job is advocate. And I walk into that, and I walk into every room carrying both those banners. Sometimes I don't want to. Sometimes I just want to be an artist. I do. I really do. But I know, because I'm the first, I have to be an advocate. It's my responsibility to, because if I don't, no one will. So I'm getting into those rooms, and I'm getting cast. And my craft as an actor is getting more and more developed. And my craft as an advocate is getting more and more developed, because I'm figuring out what I need and how to ask for it. And that's a hard thing to do. I mean, because things can change, especially in my business. Not all theaters are the same. Not all directors are the same. I get different bosses every 3 months. So I have to go into a new space, assess, and then communicate, and then negotiate. So this is kind of a fun thing. I was in a show, and this was me accommodating for myself, because most of the time I'm figuring out for myself how to do things. I was in a show called Solomanian. It was about Salome, and I played five different characters, one of which was a soldier boy, a Cockney soldier boy. He was a lovely little boy. And the opening scene was five of us soldiers, I was the only woman, by the way, launching ourselves over a 10-foot ledge with a rifle and a bayonet attached to it. And the first time we rehearsed it, and the director's like, okay, everybody, run and jump over this thing and land on the ground safely. I'm like, okay, this is, all right, because I'm that person that's like, I will figure it out. You tell me I can't, I'll go off and figure out how to do it and come back and go, here you go. Because they're not going to know. God bless those sighted people. They're not going to know. So he throws me this, you know, he throws all of us this blocking is staging. And, I forgot to say, we're in full battle gear and gas masks. And he says, okay, great, let's do it. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it first time out of the gate. Couldn't do it. And he said, do we need to change the blocking? And I said, just give me a sec, Mark. Just give me a sec. I need a sec. And when I can't do things, the first thing that happens is I feel pain. I feel frustrated. I feel pain. I often will shed a few tears to myself. And then I grit up. And I turned around to him and I said, do what you need to do. I'm going to talk to the stage manager and I'm going to rehearse this after rehearsal's over. And that's what I did. I got the stage manager and I went through and I marked every single spot where my foot and my hand needed to go. And I did it over and over and over and over, dozens and dozens and dozens of times, until it was complete muscle memory. I didn't need any eyesight at all, at all, at all. So I fly over, or I should say, opening night. We're all running from backstage up on this ledge. And the guys come over, and I fly over, and my body is doing what I just trained it to do because I'd been rehearsing it literally hundreds of times after rehearsal over and over again. And I fly over, and I land on the ground, bayonet in hand, and I realize I did it. I just did this. And I didn't kill anybody. This is awesome. So that's just one little story. I realize I'm going over time here. 2 minute mark, thank you. I want to jump fast forward to this NCIS experience. It was awesome, y'all. It was awesome. Let me tell you this. Going into the room, I took this job very seriously, not only as an actor, but an advocate, because I knew this was a big deal. I knew this was a huge deal for NCIS, for CBS, for me personally, for the community. And so even in the audition room, when usually casting directors are like, do you have any questions? And I said, no, do you? So I just opened up the conversation. After I got cast, the executive director and the director called me and said, this is so wonderful. You're going to be with us. Wonderful. We're going to be working, you're blind. So how, what, all right. We just want to, you know, and I'm like, and this is what I said to them. I said, don't worry, it's going to be great. You're going to love it. And they're like, they wanted to know, though. They were scared. I wasn't. They were. And so that night I wrote a cheat sheet. How to work with me, a cheat sheet. I'd never done that before. And I wrote down, This is my disability. This is how I see. This is how it manifests. These are the identifiers I like. You can call me blind, legally blind, partially sighted, partially blind. You cannot call me handicapped. I don't go by that. You know, just laying it out. Boom, 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 boom. Director, if you're giving me direction, I may not look at you, but I am listening. Also, if you could wear feathers, that would be great. So I'm throwing out a few jokes here and there where it turns out this little cheat sheet that I sent to them circulated through the entire NCIS production team, through CBS. I booked another show while I was on CBS, flew to Toronto. That cheat sheet had made it all the way over to Toronto. And they're like, we love your cheat sheet. It's really great. We really get you now. So, but all this to say that, and I know that you all understand this, that self-advocacy is so huge, especially when you're the first, second, and third, and any number through the door. We have to speak up for ourselves. We have to carry a large vision for ourselves when the world doesn't have that vision for ourselves. So I want to leave you with one thing. And this is a quote that I read and that I still read over and over and over again. It's by Marianne Williamson. Perhaps you have heard this quote. I'm sure you have. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us most. And we ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, the question is, who are you not to be? So the intention I want to leave with you, the intention that I have for myself, and the intention that I have for all of you is own your fabulousness. Own it. Own your absolute uniqueness and own your power to be the magnificent creators of your destiny and dreams. Thank you.
Awesome. Great job.
Thanks, Mark.
It's been a pleasure to have you. Yeah. I hope we'll have you back many times over. Thank you, Marilee. I know that Marilee has been working with members of our Performing Arts Division, so hopefully we'll see her back and be part of the energy of our convention many times over. Thank you.